Joining us today with the author of the book, Explosion Green, David Gottfried. Welcome to The Exchange.
Hey, thanks, Milt. Great to be here with you guys.
Well, good. I wanted to ask you kind of a broad overview question. 20 years ago, green building was virtually unheard of, and you saw a need at that point. Give us a little bit of an overview about how the whole process got started.
Sure. Well, 20 years ago, we were focused a bit on energy efficiency and also indoor air quality in buildings. In the 70s, 80s, we saw recycling start to kick in some parts of the country. Out of tightening up our buildings for the energy crisis of the 70s, we saw indoor air quality issues pop up. We called it sick building syndrome. So what we did is we glued all those components together, and out of that came green building. The movement really started in 25 years ago in England, and they created the world's first rating system called BREEAM, and we were fortunate to be able to study that as well. That came out of government at the time. But we put all these pieces together and invented the U.S. Green Building Council in 92, and that was a nonprofit organization, and it did not come out of government, but we invited government to participate with us, and with those components, we invented the LEED Green Building Rating System.
Tell us a little bit about LEED. What does it involve? Is it just a set standard, or does it have some flexibility built into it?
It has both. LEED stands for Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. It became the largest rating system in the world. We have about 300,000 buildings, about 10 billion square feet. It has five basic categories for green, and most of the rating systems in the world have those. LEED is the biggest. Energy efficiency, clean energy generation, water efficiency. It has waste and transportation and health. There are prerequisites, which are the fixed required points. It's 100 points total. And then it's on a voluntary basis. You can get other credits, pushing your score anywhere from LEED certified, silver, gold, to the platinum.
And do you have LEED standards that are different for private homeowners versus a business or corporation?
LEED is for buildings, and we do have LEED for homes. We have about seven versions. LEED for new construction, which is primarily commercial and large buildings and substantial renovation. We have LEED for commercial interiors inside of the building. We have LEED retail and then application guides as well for labs and campuses. We also have LEED for existing buildings, which is probably seeing our greatest growth. And that's for commercial buildings as well.
In the early days of this movement, as you were trying to get it started and get more people on board, did you get a lot of pushback for whatever reasons, whether financial or political? How smooth was the sailing early on?
We collected people whose eyes sparkled when you told them about our vision that we were going to create a coalition of the U.S. building industry to define and push green building. Not everyone's eyes sparkled, so some glazed over and said, oh, there's nothing there, or you already hit us with asbestos, and now you got this green building stuff, go away. It took a while to get a groundswell of momentum. For us, it took probably, well, I would say, 6 years, and LEED wasn't invented in the beginning. And so first we had to come together as a coalition and then work on LEED and then roll it out. But once LEED rolled out in around 2000, we really did gain momentum and our growth as a membership organization just skyrocketed. But there are plenty for a long time who were pushing back, and there are even some who still push back.
We've seen a tremendous change in technology over the past couple of decades, smartphones in our pockets and what have you. Have you seen a big change in technology as applied to green building construction? Have things changed a great deal?
It's a good question. In the building industry, historically, we've spent substantially less than high tech in innovation. Just the businesses and even government weren't putting in the billions, and we didn't have as many tax credits and grants and loans. But that's starting to change over the last two decades with green building. In high tech, I think they spend about 5% a year. In the building industry, it might have been 0.5. But what we saw in the clean tech investment class is it moved from wind and solar, which you could call part of green building, and into building materials. And the venture capitalists who have those funds for startups investment, they started to invest in green materials such as carbon sequestration and electrochromatic windows, even bricks that had high recycled content, and then moving into the energy field significantly with a lot of those investments in control technology. So the technology has accelerated, and there's just incredible opportunity, not just using computers and sensor technology, but also in the materials themselves. And pulling from high tech, that's where the innovation is coming from. And some of the best CEOs were high tech CEOs coming into the more stagnant building industry.
And they got on board and slowly but surely and came over to your side.
Yeah, and the VCs are bringing them in. If they scaled a software company or worked at Cisco, we've seen those types of CEOs in our industry moving into lighting and even dynamic windows.
This is the Jefferson Exchange. We are talking with David Gottfried, the author of Explosion Green. We'll take a short break right now and come back with your questions and comments. You can call in your questions at 800-838-3760 or send us an email at jx@jeffnet.org. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Milt Radford, filling in today for Jeffrey Riley. Today we're talking with David Gottfried, the author of Explosion Green. Call in with your comments and questions about the green building movement. You can reach us at 1-800-838-3760 or send us an email at jx@jeffnet.org. David, one of the questions I had was 20 years ago, as you were seeing technologies implemented in greening buildings, whether it was a restoration or renovation project or new building construction, were there certain technologies back then that looked promising that maybe didn't pan out?
Thinking that through, well, solar did pan out quite a bit. We haven't seen wind so much on buildings. Yeah, I'll tell you the one thing that's still not happening that should is solar hot water. We call it solar thermal. And I studied that 30 years ago at Stanford, and you can see that water really can contain the heat, and it's a great mechanism for circulating it. And you can put those panels on your roof, and when it's hotter on the roof and that black panel than the water itself, you can have heat transfer. We used it in a home I did for both the heating in terms of radiant and the hot water. And all mechanical engineers are in love with solar hot water. And you barely see it on our roofs here in the U.S. You see it a lot more in Israel and even Mexico. But here, that hasn't happened. And it's a phenomenal return on investment and comfort item as well.
Here in Southern Oregon, we have really hot summers, as well as the northern part of Northern California. And so you do see people who use that quite often to heat swimming pools. But I don't know if folks are using it quite as much to heat the hot water for their homes as well. Speaking of that, like a few years ago, I was vacationing in California and I toured some of the old missions. And I was really impressed by the way they had these long breezeways and they used a lot of passive solar heating and cooling for the climate. It seems like a lot of that was forgotten for a long period of time. Are we seeing, even for people who don't install active systems in their homes and buildings, are we seeing better use of passive solar today?
We're seeing that increase, and there comes out of Germany substantial research in passive homes that don't even need active heating or cooling. We super insulate the buildings as a first solution. But I believe it's increasing, but we could still do substantially more with the natural ventilation that you're talking about. The other part of those old structures is they had large overhangs, and that didn't let in the western sun that beats up on the windows. And those overhangs understood that the west was different than the north. And I have yet to see almost any overhangs on any homes or buildings that seem to be appropriately sized to the sun condition. And we're doing so much more air conditioning and heat gain and glare into our homes and buildings than we have. So I think we could do a lot better. We could also build down into the soil more and benefit from that cool temperature that's just about 6 feet below. And it's always steady.
For individuals, homeowners who would like to do some kind of improvement on their existing structure, you know, we've been through a recession recently. For the folks who didn't lose their homes, sometimes at the end of the month, their budget is very tight. There's not a lot left over. Do you have some recommendations for individuals like that, some baby steps that maybe they could take in order to make their home greener without a big expenditure of money?
Yeah, homeowners can do a lot, and even with a small budget, even with no budget, when you buy some new things, you can buy the green alternative, such as a new refrigerator, washer, dryer. You can buy Energy Star rated appliances. You can buy them as laptops and computers as well. You could buy a dishwasher that, or washer, dryer that use less water. That's fairly significant. The measure I like best, which we did in our old 1915 Craftsman, was air infiltration tightening up of the home. You hire a consultant. I think we paid about $600-$700 for the day. He came in, he took one of the doors and put an air blower test on it, blew air through the house, and could see where it was leaking out of the windows through the cracks in the windows. And our biggest leak was around a fireplace and even in the attic and the crawl space. He then went around with foam and tightened up the house, used weather stripping and caulking as well. The end of the day, our air loss was 50% less, and the payback period on that $700 was about 3 months in lower energy bills as well as more comfort. So that's a phenomenal thing you can do. When you buy a furnace, buy a energy-efficient one with a high SEER rating. SEER ratings are now in the 90% efficient range. If you're going to do a renovation, you can put in insulation. You can blow it into your walls with cellulose or use batting under the crawl space or in the attic. Insulation is a great investment and pretty cheap.
Joining us is Pam in Dexter. Pam, go ahead.
Hi. Well, I'm working with a group, Oregonians for Industrial Hemp, and hemp became legal to grow in Oregon for industrial use in, I think, 2002. But anyways, I was wondering, are you guys investigating or using or knowledgeable about the hemp building products such as hempcrete, I just see it as a fantastic alternative to clear-cutting our forests. I mean, you still use wood for the framing, but the hempcrete can be used for the, like, kind of building blocks. And I just wondered what your thoughts were and if you have any, if anything's being implemented along those lines.
I've heard about it coming into play. I haven't personally studied hemp in terms of building products, but it's rapidly renewable, is my understanding. And to the extent that we can use such items, including bamboo, I imagine you can pull it into insulation. So as long as it's non-toxic, which I think it is, and can be pretty cheap and renewable and effective in terms of R values of insulation or this crete, I haven't studied, but I would be interested in learning more, and it sounds like there is a place for it.
I had a question, David, about the affordability of some of this. I would imagine in the early days of the movement, when new technologies and new ways of building are being developed, it was probably pretty expensive. Have we closed the gap significantly, or are there still things that are kind of pricey in terms of renovation?
Affordability is linked to two things. One is education and knowledge and how to put things together and what to buy and how to use your budget effectively. The other is certain things do cost more as you step up the green performance level. As you go from certified towards net zero, you're going to have costs increase at some point. But we found you could get certified silver, gold for 1 or 2% to zero cost increase. And the more a city such as Seattle, who did their own green buildings, the more LEED buildings they did for their public safety facilities, libraries, fire stations, the cost came from 4% down towards zero. So they learned how to do it. The other thing I mentioned is using your budget. Often we'll spend the money for the fancy marble or granite, even fancy furniture, but we won't give any money to insulation or good windows. Hmm. And those items have payback, whereas the furniture is pretty, but there isn't a payback period in terms of energy savings. So it's how we use our budget. Costs are coming down as knowledge and volume increases. Volume is a big part of it, certainly, as well. I remember when cell phones came out, they were about $3,500. Now they're almost free because the real money is the monthly payment plan that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we'll see affordability continue to come down as knowledge and volume increase.
We are speaking with David Gottfried, the author of Explosion Green, One Man's Journey to Green the World's Largest Industry. It's a roughly 20-year tale of getting folks on board with this. If you have any questions about maybe remodeling your own home and making it greener and helping the environment while saving some money over the long term or even short term, you can give us a call here at the Jefferson Exchange, our toll-free number, 1-800-838-3760, or send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. I asked you earlier about things you could do if you were a private homeowner. What if you're a big business? Like if you're starting out with new construction, we look at what Apple is building, and I assume that that's going to be green from top to bottom because it's Apple. But for a big corporation that's sitting on a pile of money, what's sort of the sky's the limit, the dreams kind of renovation or building you could do?
Well, they're going for LEED Platinum. And then in energy and water, they're stepping up higher to net zero energy and then net zero water, maybe even net zero waste. They're going to generate as net zero as much energy as they use. It gets tricky for Apple and Google, Facebook, eBay, for their data centers because those are monsters of energy use.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to make them super efficient, and then even harder is to offset that energy. So they're putting solar or even building solar farms nearby and counting that energy. Hopefully they're super insulating the envelopes with insulation, great windows, and then they look at the clean energy generation firms like Apple and Google even more are concerned about indoor environmental quality. At Google, they measure the air quality, looking for low levels or no levels of formaldehyde and CO2. They don't want that in the air in terms of health and productivity for their people. Larry Page is all over that at Google. They're also diving deeper and looking at all the materials in the Living Building Challenge rating system, which comes near you from our Cascadia region, our chapter of USGBC. That's a separate system from LEED, and they have a red list of about a dozen building products they don't want to see in the building. And projects are starting to get those items out, whether it's the PVC, certainly mercury, and items like that, but they're going more progressive and looking at the potential endocrine disruptor products and trying to source those buildings so they don't have them. That requires a lot of research for the team, and certain items like cabling have a lot of different components, and you may not even be able to find a product that doesn't have that red list item. And if that's the case, you're required to write to that manufacturer that you're going to buy it from them, but you inform them the second a product exists without that toxic ingredient, you will no longer buy from them.
Mm.
So it's trying to move into the health and health of buildings for our occupants is really the hottest area right now that those big companies are looking at after you've hit the net zeros.
Peter is on the line in Ashland. Go ahead, Peter.
Hi, thanks for the show. I am calling really, I originally in the 80s, I grew up in Colorado and really became aware fairly immediately when I had to pay for my own utility bill, the importance of orientation of a house, which really led me ultimately into permaculture of integrating your house and your garden and all this stuff together. But through people who, if they're interested in this, Rocky Mountain interested, as I'm Rocky Mountain Institute, as I'm sure David is aware of them. I worked for Amory Lovins for a while, and you know, seeing that integration of your indoor environment, like you were talking about, with the heating and the, just bringing it all together. It was so ingenious. The building that he built and I helped with in Snowmass, Colorado, and how it integrated their office space and their living space, and it was all, almost no energy involved at all, outside energy coming into it. And I encourage people to check out rmi.com. And
org.org.
And also I wanted to put a plug in for, I'm not sure if David, are you aware of Paula and Robert Laporte with EcoNest?
I am not. Please tell us about it.
I encourage you. They're local here in Ashland, and I only discovered them about 5 or 6 years ago, and I think they really take it a whole nother step beyond green building. Apparently, she was on the board of when they were establishing the LEED standards, but it is such a beautiful home that I've seen them do, and it really, in some ways, mimicked what, when I lived in Arizona, I saw with straw bale homes and rammed earth and stuff that were so well designed that they really didn't use any energy at all.
Well, thank you, Peter. And let me ask a question on that, David. Are we finding corporations that are more cognizant of trying to build in harmony with their environment now?
Yes. Well, we spoke about Apple and Google. Many, maybe hundreds of corporations are trying to go green. Some of them are going deeper into the environment in which they live and trying to open it up more. They're certainly trying to bring in quality of life for their people. I think Google allows one day a week of free time for their staff as well, so they can volunteer in the community. The cost, especially, and you have this in the Portland area and Seattle, the cost of an engineer and a data or tech company is huge to replace them. And so they want to make their employees really happy to go to work. They want to embrace them. If they go green, that's part of their ethics, and they want to show that they care. And they're going much further into the food, into the daylighting of the space, the individual control, so that people are happy. Adobe near me in the Bay Area here has this whole level of space they built, and it's got like these diner tables where meetings can occur, and every diner table has a flat top screen there, and they have lounge areas to hang out, and even nap areas and ping pong areas. It looks like play and camp, but it leads to health and productivity as well.
Happier employees.
Two companies are hitting it.
We're talking with David Gottfried, the author of Explosion Green, discussing green building practices. We'll take a short break here on the Jefferson Exchange, then come back with your comments and questions. You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-838-3760 or send us an email at jx@jeffnet.org. We'll be back with David Gottfried and your comments and questions right after the break. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Milt Radford, filling in today for Jeffrey Riley. Today we're talking with David Gottfried, author of Explosion Green. This is a book that tells the 20-year story of the global green building movement through his eyes. He was one of the leaders in getting this movement started a couple of decades ago. You can call in with your questions or comments about green building at 1-800-838-3760 or email us at jx@jeffnet.org. Let's take a call now from Brad in Ashland. Welcome, Brad.
Hi, thanks a lot. I love this kind of topic. I remember Buckminster Fuller saying that a house is a machine for living in. And I think if we apply the natural forces around a house in an intelligent way, it will supply a lot of our needs, just as he was saying around passive design and about the use of hot water, which we don't use, we don't talk about. Everybody talks about photovoltaic, and they ignore the advantages of a hot water system. I would like to suggest something for the future. If it's true that the sunlight can be used for heating purposes on a passive design, like, say, a big sunny window helps and you sit in and it's comfortable, and the rooftop gives you your hot water or maybe some PV electric, it's also true that the rest of the roof is absorbing sunlight and the rest of the wall is absorbing sunlight in the wintertime. And I'm thinking that there ought to be products that are designed as walls for the south wall and as roof for the south roof. Instead of adding products to them, they would be, in fact, the water absorber, the photovoltaic absorber, and on the south wall, maybe a hot air exchange system to move heat to the north side of the building. Has he run into any products that are like designed to go around the windows on the south wall or to be the entire roofing instead of adding to a roof?
David?
That's my question. Thanks.
Yeah, you point out a lot of good things. When I studied solar design 30 years ago, they had something to the actually western wall with water in it called a trom wall, T-R-O-M, I think it was B, maybe E, and water was even better than air, and that wall during the hot western day would absorb the heat, and then you could use it for heating at night. And also at night, it serves as a bit of a heat exchanger. You can get cooler water if you wanted and then use that when you needed air conditioning. so water can be a phase change material a bit as well. In terms of the roof, there are PV systems, photovoltaics, that are integral into the roofing shingle, and I've seen that as part of the system. So you don't have to buy a full roof and then put the photovoltaics on top, that they're actually together. There have been windows where the PV is integrated into the window. We call it BIPV, building integrated photovoltaics. So they are starting to think about putting the energy generation cells in the roof and the walls. On the roof, we do need the dark surface for the heat transfer of hot water or the PV system. But where you're not wanting to generate that, you actually want a light-colored roof so it doesn't capture the heat, and then you have to air condition the building or the home, or your house just heats up. And so there's a whole movement of light-colored, we call it the albedo factor. We measure the reflectance of color as well. But certainly when you want to heat up, you want it black.
Do you have roofs that can do that, that can basically change from dark to light depending upon the season?
We do not. That's a good product. You can do it. We do have windows out now that can go from clear to dark by putting an electronic signal through them. Those are called dynamic window, and there are two main companies that are selling those right now. They can use them on skylights as well, but that's from clear to dark, not the color rendition. But I think principally where you want to generate hot water or PV, that would be back all the time. And then the rest of the roof that isn't used for generation would want to be a light color and keep it that. So you would want it static.
Bernard in Medford has a question or comment about solar panels. Go ahead, Bernard.
Yes, I've been listening to the discussion. And one of the things I think that you can't compete with the solar farms as far as economic capability goes. Europe is putting these solar panels on buildings and so on because the land is so valuable as far as farming, as far as other uses. We have large areas, Nevada, Arizona, other areas, where it's much more reasonable and economic to put the solar power. So I'd be interested in the reply.
Yes, David, what about that?
I agree with the farm. Solar farm, you get economy of scale and ease of install as well. If you can put it, they put it on racks on a large piece of flat land. You orient it towards the sun at the right angle, but you can get enormous volume, and the cost can come way down versus installing it on a home that has different slope angles, and it might even have terracotta shingles, and you have to remove those in some cases. So the efficiency is quite great, and then just feed it to the electric grid. You do, with a grid, though, if you're moving energy around, you have loss. So that's one issue. But the economies of these solar farms is quite great. They also get tax credits, which help, and investors can put up the money.
Oops. So these questions...
So they make great sense where you have land, and land is cheap. But if land is expensive or you're pulling it out of agriculture, then that may not be the best use to generate energy and get rid of food production.
Do you think we'll see more like regional type energy generation instead of large scale? There have been these proposals, T. Boone Pickens and his wind thing that eventually went away. Do you have a sense of which direction we might be going in this country?
I think we're seeing both, but I always start with a small distributed approach. We did just talk about efficiency of the farms, but then that gives everyone a free pass to not be efficient at their home. So I do believe the first place we should start is with our buildings and our homes and get those as efficient as possible and get your BTU load down in terms of efficiency. That's with the insulations and the better appliances and fixtures. Then generate clean electrons on site if you can with solar. It could be wind. And then go to these larger solutions. I think you're going to have both. It's not an either or, but we all need to do the best we can on what we can control. And at the same time, we need these larger mega solutions in tandem.
We're speaking with David Gottfried, the author of Explosion Green, about the green building movement. If you have a question that you'd like to ask about your own home or about policy or buildings in general, you can contact us here at The Exchange. Call us at 1-800-838-3760 or send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. On the line now, Dean in Ashland. Go ahead, Dean. Dean, are you there? Maybe Dean's not there. How about we try Dennis in Eugene? Go ahead, Dennis. Trying to get Dennis on the line.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
My question is, I am all for all this kind of stuff. It's nice and everything. But it kind of what we're describing here on the radio is sort of an elitist situation like Google, Adobe, you know, Facebook. These are the one percenters. Most of the people that I know are barely making a little over minimum wage. They either are renting or just scraping by trying to make their house payment. They haven't got a wage increase for maybe 10 or 15 years. And generally speaking, they're going backwards. So I don't really see how you could expect them to spend money that they don't have to make their house or the house that they're living in or the rental that they're living in more energy efficient. And so I'd like to see if we could address that question a little bit.
Well, David, I was going to ask, are there programs out there like low-cost loans or grants or rebates that are available to people?
There are, and you can go to your local utility. I imagine in Eugene, the utility would do that, and they'll help you make your home more efficient. I did it once, and they gave us some items for free. You can make it water efficient as well, so they gave us free little aerators for our faucets and our shower heads so we didn't pump out so many gallons as we wore. They gave you a blanket, insulation blanket for your water heater, and they had other measures. They gave you clothing lines so you could dry your clothes outside instead of running the dryer. Your point is good, so let's focus on that even more. We've mentioned some simple water items. If you had to buy all those things I mentioned yourself, it would still be very cheap. These aerators are a few bucks, as is you can get a more efficient shower head for 10 or 12 bucks. The military uses those. On the energy side, if your windows leak, you can't afford dual pane windows, you can go to your hardware store, buy it's a fancy saran wrap, but made for windows. You put it over your window where it's leaking in the winter, you tape it around edges, and you get a air blow dryer on it to make it into a vacuum. And you've made a very cheap dual-pane window for 1/100th of the cost. You can buy cheap insulation batting, very cheap, and put it in yourself under the house and in the attic. Now, if you don't have money for food, are you going to buy cheap insulation? Maybe not, so you can go to the utility to get grants or loans or help, but there are measures you can do that are extraordinarily low cost.
And I know here in Southern Oregon, we do have some energy assistance programs for folks. On the line with us, let's see, Dean in Ashland. We'll try again. Go ahead, Dean.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
I can. Go ahead.
Okay. I'd like to share some things I've done in my life, part of the green movement. I own a rental and my own home that I built. And I put in solar hot water panels system in both homes. And they heat water beautifully, but I have encountered some problems with the systems. And they were installed by a professional, very well done, but the tank, the solar thermal tank itself was faulty. And over the years, every tank I purchased from this company has leaked. And since they were under warranty, I had to replace them with the existing company's tank. So over time, I recently had one that's failed for the fourth time. I had it installed again by a company in Eugene, which I'd like to put a plug in for, Solar Assist. Came in, took out the leaking tank, put in a new tank. It's working beautifully now because, you know, my wife and I, when we look at the utility bills, we're seeing that we're saving about $100 a month and especially about half the year on our utility bills if the solar is working. So it definitely pays for itself, but over the long term. But over the years, in the rental unit, that tank leaked as well, had it replaced. The mixing valve failed. I had to pay $450 to have that replaced. So, you know, it's just a toss-up whether a person wants a trouble-free, how much are you really going to gain from a system? I think that's maybe one reason why it hasn't been implemented or people haven't taken it on as much as possible.
Dean, we're running a little low on time, but thank you for your comment that you had. Just quickly, in the few seconds we have left, David, where's the Green Building Council today, and what are some of your future goals?
The U.S. Green Council is now 20-plus years old. You can find out more at usgbc.org. It's really doing great with LEED and expanding that. We're trying to get to existing homes and get more towards real-time dynamic data. We call it the dynamic plaque. And we have the Green Build Conference. We're going to have it in New Orleans this year. We did have it in Portland 1 year. And you can download the LEED building systems, whether it's for your home or your building, for free at usgbc.org.
We've been talking with David Gottfried, author of Explosion Green, about the green building movement. David, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Milt. Great to share some thoughts on green with you guys.
Tomorrow on The Exchange, the Southern Oregon World of Wine event kicks off. Then Medford looks into regulation of message boards. And at 9 o'clock, we talk with the author of The End of Absence. Our producer today of the Jefferson Exchange is Charlotte Duren. I'm Milt Radford, filling in for Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for joining us.